I'm sure all of us have heard of big data. It's very impossible these days not to hear of big data. Obviously, in the insurance industry, we collect a lot of data. There's no doubt about that. The issue we come across is, are we actually collecting the right data, and what are the barriers that we have into collating that data and analysing that data? So today we have two excellent speakers to talk about data with respect to disability income, which all we know is a troublesome area for most insurers. Michael Dermy joined KPMG in 1999, just on the edge of the millennium. But prior to that, he was working at AMP. He's been involved in reviewing disability income experience, selecting factors for analysis, as well as considering additional data capture to assist with future investigations and pricing. Analysis involved benchmarking and availability, and of course that important thing, making sure the data is accurate. He is a member of the Life Insurance Wealth and Management Practice Committee and the Accountants and Actuaries Liaison Committee, and has previously published papers on group life experience and unit pricing. Chris Schubert used to be at KPMG not so long ago, but decided to go join MLC earlier this year, working in the capital and risk management team. He's an active member of the profession, he's a member of the Actuaries Institute Life and Financial Reporting Subcommittee, and has also assisted numerous companies in doing disability investigations, including two large life companies and three reinsurers. During those work, he's obviously identified the lack of breadth and depth of various data available, and has undertaken to do this presentation to help us get a better grasp on our data. So I'll forward on to Michael to start off with.
Well, thanks, Eddie, and good afternoon, everyone. So there's been a lot of discussion recently about the sustainability of the Australian retail disability income product. And while there's been a lot of focus recently on claims management, many of you would be aware of the recent insight session that Munich Re ran in February and March, which indicate clearly that questions remain about whether the industry has really resolved all of the pricing and design issues. And Chris and I think that at the heart of resolving those issues is dramatically improved data capture and analysis. And clearly we're starting to give this more attention, but I think it deserves a lot more prominence and a lot more effort than it's getting and has got in the past. So while there are various views, I think that many of you would not be surprised that in terms of collecting and analysing data to understanding claims risks, the Australian life insurance industry has lagged. It's lagged the finance industries in Australia, it's lagged the other insurance industries in Australia, and it's lagged the life insurers overseas. Therefore, in this presentation, we'll consider briefly what is being done elsewhere, and taking that into account, what we think needs to be done next. Now, as part of preparing for this presentation, I also spoke with most of the direct disability income writers, as well as the reinsurers, and also the claim systems vendors, to share with you their perspectives and views. Okay, so, and most of you sort of know this. In terms of background, life insurers are not making much money out of this product. You can see there the December quarter. These are the APRA statistics. In the December quarter 2014, we actually lost $400 million. So I think most of you know that, but I think it's those numbers which underlie the pessimism about this product. Okay, so what's the industry's own view about its maturity in terms of analysing and collecting data, and about what the views are on whether we'll be reserving and pricing on the same factors of the future? And I think I was quite pleased to see that in almost all cases, except for one reinsurer and one direct writer, people thought that the rating factors, the reserving, would change dramatically in future. And you know, in doing those discussions, the strength of those beliefs certainly came through. And I've got some of the quotes there from the interviews. You know, research, can't believe more insight wouldn't come out of that. We started using external data sources. We got value out of it, and we are going to continue with it. So I think those sorts of quotes should highlight to you that those people that have started on this process have got some understandings and some tangible value from this work, and they plan to progress it. And I think the other thing is that given we collect so much data, but we analyse so little of it, you know, that again shouldn't be a surprise that we're able to make progress just by taking those first initial steps. And in terms of those volumes of data, if we just think for a moment about all of the data that we currently do collect, and in most cases, unfortunately, it is spread across multiple systems, and that has been one of the sources of problems. There's all sorts of data that we collect at underwriting at point of sale, while we're administering the policy, in terms of claims processing, you know, agent management. And then on top of that, we're also collecting things like medical reports and phone calls and other correspondence. One point I thought was worth highlighting on this slide that some actuaries might not be aware of is some of the systems, other systems you might not be aware of that data's being input to and actually provides another data source. So I've got up there claims management aids, such as ODG and MG guidelines, where claims managers actually input details about a claim, input details about severity and complicating factors, and get responses from that system in relation to the physiological minimum expected return to work time. They get feedback around ordinary, not very well managed expected return to work time and what a best practice return to work time is. So there's all sorts of systems there, and I think one thing we need to do as actuaries is get a better understanding. There needs to be greater interlinking with the claims area and operations. That's started to happen, but it hasn't happened enough. We still have valuation being driven by actuaries, all of the systems development and implementation being driven by the claims area, and not enough interaction going on there. And combined with that is the importance of social and psychological factors, which is something actuaries are also really just starting to get their heads around. Okay, so I'll just quickly go through. This is sort of a current analysis of what insurers are doing at the moment. And I've broken that down into what everyone's doing, what some people are doing, what's fairly rare, and then what people are considering. So, of course, everyone's doing their annual experience investigation, they're comparing the actual claims against the expected claims. They're supplementing that with one-way analysis, so that's fine. But typically those one-way analyses are restricted to factors that were being used in reserving and pricing. So age, underwriting, benefit period, agreed value versus indemnity, gender, etc. And then some people are getting a little bit more experimental using two-way tables, you know, smoker and gender or age and gender. So the good news is some people have developed that. So we're starting to see the use of generalised linear models. I think another positive development has been the ad hoc analysis that people do every now and then, and that can be driven by various factors. So, for example, at the moment, a lot of people are monitoring their analysis of profit, obviously, and then all of a sudden, if they make a loss, they get a whole group of people together and do a deep dive, try and work out where that aggregate loss. Where that loss was coming from. So that's one source of doing a one-off sort of targeted analysis. Another source is the discussion with claims and underwriting. So I mentioned before we've started to do that. A lot of companies now are starting to do monthly or sometimes less frequently sort of structured catch-up with claims and underwriting to understand and get their views on anecdotally, you know, what are any sources of increasing incidents? What are any sources of problems with getting people back to work? What are they actually seeing? What are they seeing at the coalface? Now, unfortunately, underwriters and claims managers are just as subject to bias in terms of anecdotes, their own beliefs and recent experience as actuaries are. So all of that analysis needs to be supported by sort of deep dives and use of data. But nonetheless, those discussions people are finding them useful for finding patterns and problems, and they're also finding them useful anyway just to understand what is going on in the claims area. starting to consider database and linking across systems. That's something that really some people are doing. It's not all that common. There needs to be more of it. Jumping back a little bit, another thing that's just sort of starting is a lot of the larger organisations have a group data analytics team that's running over their general insurers or over their banks. So they've got resources and IT and statistical capability at the group level, which is being used, and that will and is starting to be thought about, well, how are we going to apply that in the life insurer subsidiary that we've got? And that analytics, often it's fairly unstructured, so they're basically just getting a whole bunch of data, throwing it together, and seeing what relationships and patterns they can find. Okay, I'll run through these slides fairly quickly on a bit more feedback from those discussions we had with the direct riders. So that slide there on the left, I think that was very interesting. So we've gone from a world where we're paper-based, we're not collecting all the information, to now, it's actually becoming quite common, not surprisingly, to collect all the information electronically, phone calls, medical reports, etc. So we're actually now building a lot more data. The data is starting to become available. What's not happening on the right is using it. Okay, I'll just roll through these very quickly. You know, are you planning further development? That was pretty much a yes for everyone. This other slide on the right around who's been involved and what capability is being brought, I thought that was quite interesting. I think there are some issues there around, are we bringing the right capability? Are we as actuaries just using the same tools, the same software that we're familiar with? What's becoming clear in the literature, and you know, if you're part of a firm like ours which has a data analytics area, is the cost of all of this analytic capability is coming down and the functionality is growing. So question mark there about whether, you know, whether we're really optimising the effort, whether it's still being done mainly by actuaries. External data sources, I think I've already talked about that. It was basically, there's not a lot of that happening. I thought I'd throw this slide up before Chris starts talking about what the next steps are. Often there's lots of reasons life insurance actuaries put forward why we're not doing these things, some of the obstacles that get in the way. Some of them are genuine. There are some permanent differences between the retail life disability income data and some differences in data and the data gathering that might change over time. So I'll just roll through these very quickly. Volume. So volume's an issue. Disability income, we don't have that many policies, we don't have that many claims as we do in health and general insurance. So that's an issue. It's probably always going to be a bit of an issue. But I think it is overplayed. And what's happened is that it's used as too much of an excuse to make things not worth looking at, when in reality, some of the problems that we've had, they're so big, you actually don't need much data to find it. You need some good analytic techniques, and you need to join the data together. So let's not overplay that. Data depth we talked about, we're collecting a lot of direct information on the individual. It's fantastic. There's a lot of, you know, sort of sexiness and hype around big data, but we're already collecting a lot of fantastic data that's a direct observation on the person we're trying to insure or we are insuring. Free text. Again, a lot of people say this, a lot of the data that businesses capture on people are unstructured, and life insurers, there's probably been a bit too much of it. We've had occupation, we've had cause of claim, which has been in free text field or not codified, and that's being rectified right now. So that's being fixed. So that's fine, that'll fix that. But the reality is, because some of those social and psychological factors, like a person's attitude to work, attitude to work is, I was trying to think of a couple of other ones. Attitude to work, I might move on. But the psychosocial ones are very important, and they'll probably always be addressed by in terms of open-ended questions. How do you feel about? Well, another one is family. So, how, you know, other people at work, other people at home working. You know, how do you feel about your employer? Ethical, legal, or cultural things, I'll probably just skip over that. Temporary differences, data quality. We've done a lot around data quality. It's been very poor in the past, but it's starting to get fixed now. monitoring impacts of change. I think this is a really important one, and this is one worth pausing on. And I think it's one that reflects a difference between, you know, life insurers and other industries. You know, life insurers look at a product change or a term and condition change, and they say, and they look at it in a very negative light. Man, that is going to be a lot in terms of systems expense to collect it. So it's negative in terms of cost, let's not bother about it, and then negative in terms of, instead of doing any analysis, we just speculate. We just speculate about what the impact might be. And if you think about other industries, they actually embrace change. They embrace change and they recognise that change is the best opportunity to obtain data-driven evidence about patterns and relationships and behaviours. It's completely different. It's a completely different mindset. Okay. Skip over that. Insights from other regions. Look, I'll just quickly skip over this so Chris can move on to what we need to do next. But we spoke to some of our overseas colleagues in terms of life insurance and what's being used and what's been helpful. I thought this might have been a little bit interesting. You know, things like credit scores might surprise people, but our US colleague says credit scores are a proxy for everything. Pet insurance, home insurance, life insurance, you name it. You've got a bad credit score, you're going to be a bad insurance risk. Prescription information, demographics, I mean, some of those will be fairly familiar to all of you. Overseas life insurers, they're doing more unstructured analysis, they're collecting more data, we're a long way from that. Text mining of claim notes. Text mining is a good example of an area where the technology's moved a long way ahead. So there's a lot of software now, it's relatively cheap to, you know, to text mine, go through free text fields. You know, things like analysis by advisor is another. It's another good sort of element to check on where problems can come from. Okay, and with that, I'll hand over to Chris to talk about what we do now.
Thanks, Michael. Now, taking into account approaches adopted by data analytics professionals in other regions and in other industries, we've come up with our view about what the proposed key action should be for disability income riders in Australia. And given the wealth of potential next steps that you can do for data analysis, our key focus was to propose actions that were specific for companies, where they could start small, demonstrate some value from the additional analysis, and be agile enough to change and then look at other areas. So this slide shows our summarised five actions. So at the top, the dark box is the most immediate, the highest priority action, and then it goes down to the lighter box, which is the lowest priority. And so our belief is companies that have a richness of internal specific individual data that is currently not being fully utilised in terms of analysis and business decisions, and that should be leveraged first before going to the more sexy area of external data. The next few slides will go into each of these actions in more detail. But a key point to note here is that each of the disability income riders in Australia are at different parts of their development. So I think as I go through each of the actions in more detail, it's worth thinking about where in your own company, if you're in a disability income rider, where you are and where these actions might relate to what you should be doing. So our first proposed step is to leverage the internal data that companies have now and apply more advanced analytical techniques. So there's two key questions involved there. One is what is the data that we currently have access to that we're not using at the moment? And the second question is, what are the limitations with the current analytic techniques that we're using? On the first question of data and what we're leveraging at the moment, the first three rows on this slide contain our observations. So firstly, companies aren't linking up information between systems. For example, they aren't taking advantage of underwriting data when looking at claims experience. So do we really understand the impact of changes in underwriting practice and how we're expanding what we consider to be a standard life? Also, for companies that do have access to banking data, when you're looking at claims experience, are they considering what, say, transactional data or credit scores might have on the impact of disability income experience? So I'm not suggesting that there exists a direct mapping between, say, a claims and admin system and other systems, but there are companies that are achieving approximate matches between these systems. And the lesson from other industries is that people are finding insight from imperfect matching. And so it just highlights the risk of not starting just because we don't have some perfect match at the moment. Our second observation of what data isn't being utilised is that companies aren't currently leveraging the unstructured data that's at their disposal. And this has been shown to have good insight in terms of analysing claims experience in other regions. Text mining is an extremely useful approach to gaining insight from unstructured data. As Michael has already mentioned, that companies are moving towards codifying a lot more of the fields, and so reducing the volume of unstructured data. So this, there'll be less importance on having to do that going forward. Thirdly, as Michael mentioned earlier, companies are still battling with data errors, although there has been quite significant progress made in this area. I think the next stage, from our perspective in terms of reducing data errors, is to reduce the manual input into the process. So, for example, leveraging online claims form applications where information can be automatically uploaded into a claim system, or you could leverage some external piece of information like ATO or Medicare records that could pre-populate some fields that are prone to data errors. Now, this slide contains another view of the large opportunities regarding leveraging external data. The bottom half of the slide looks at all of the fields that are available in a claim system, while the top half of the slide looks at the additional fields that would be available for our analysis if we were to link it up to the underwriting system. At this point, I'd like you to consider the factors that are currently used to explain disability income experience in Australia. And then look at the number of factors that are up there that's at our disposal to explain experience. Consider that this additional data up there is direct and specific to the individual, and it includes factors that have already been identified through other research in the UK and the US that impact the propensity to return to work, specifically the social and psychological factors. This research tells us that from a physiological perspective, that the time on claim is generally fairly consistent, with some allowance and adjustment for compounding physical factors. But it's the psychology of the claimant that's quite critical in terms of understanding the likelihood of returning to work. Also consider that there may be more detailed data in some of these systems. So, for example, for occupation class, in the underwriting system, there's likely to be a lot more detail about what that occupation is relative to what's currently stored in claims and admin systems. And that's a factor that has a lot of explanatory power in terms of disability income experience. So depending upon the stage of company's development, there'll be differing levels of these data that's available. But the key point to note here, going back as well, is that it's starting from somewhere, and there's still explanatory power in looking at the small amounts of data that is available and then building on that knowledge of the relationships going forward. So back to our proposed actions and the second question regarding limitations of current analysis that's being undertaken. The key insight here is that there are still companies solely undertaking one-way analysis when looking at experience and still using things like Excel and Access to analyse data. And this has significant limitations when dealing with large data sets. And this is effectively using the wrong tools to get the best outcome for the job. Regarding the analysis techniques, using one-way analysis will require analysing a number of different factors to really understand interaction effects and require significant standardisation. And as Michael mentioned earlier, the costs of advanced technologies are continually falling, which means that getting the best solution should be considering more fully and more widely what alternative approaches are out there and not just continually scaling up familiar but inefficient and ineffective technologies. Our proposed second level action is to build into the system architecture the data advances made from the first level analysis. And what we're trying to do here is to limit the amount of ongoing work that would be involved in undertaking the analysis. So suggested advancements to the system architecture flow on from those three key points that I talked about before about leveraging all of the internal data that we have. So firstly, on the previous slide, we talked about companies linking different sets of data. So in this phase, we're discussing actually creating that link and putting it into the system architecture. So this slide goes back to what Michael was talking about earlier and demonstrates a significant amount of additional data that would be available if the links between the systems were created. A common way of doing this overseas is to create regular snapshots of the data from each of the different data sets and then to have a program create a link between those data sets automatically, and this new single data set is where all of the analysis and information is coming from, and that's across the top of the slide up there. And an advanced improvement at this stage would be also to be including the concept of a customer in life insurance. So a lot of the data that we analyse at the moment is all at a policy level, and we have in some cases little understanding about how many policies a customer might have, not within life insurance and outside of the life insurance entity. So adding a customer ID here would provide significant additional insight regarding retention strategies and would give a more complete view about what the value of that customer is to the entity. Our second proposed action is to, where practical, update the system design to limit free text fields. So as mentioned earlier, a number of companies are already progressing along this line. And thirdly, it would be to correct some of the data errors into data errors that have been identified previously to build some of those the knowledge into how the system is being designed. So implement some business rules to reduce the likelihood of those errors occurring even if there is a breakdown in process. Another proposed second level action is to start collecting information routinely that may be considered to be important. So this could be based on anecdotal information from people that are close to the policyholder, say at underwriting or claims time, or it could be based on external research, or it could come from actuaries who are close to the data and thinking about what potential causal relationships there are. So there are many times that we interact with our policyholders, so we've put up some example fields of what additional data could be collected into those interactions. But the key point here is that we think actuaries should be taking a role in designing what information should be collected now so that we can analyse that information going forward. And one reinsurer that we spoke to summed it up quite well. They said that there's a role for actuaries for designing what the claims reporting should look like in 5 years' time. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. It's about taking action now that'll be delivering benefits for the future. So taking a more strategic and long-term view to claims reporting and analysis. In our level one actions, we also propose deeper analysis to be undertaken, and here we propose to utilise that analysis in decision making. So often experience analyses are done in the valuation team of the insurer, and as such, there tends to be a natural focus on valuation outcomes and optimising business decisions or claims underwriting is less of a focus. On the other side of the coin, you have claim system projects, which tend to be run by claims teams and therefore have a natural tendency to support the ongoing day-to-day management of claims rather than, again, the analysis side of it. So in the discussions that we've had, there has started to be greater alignment between teams, but we think there should be more overlap here to optimise outcomes. And some have suggested that potentially moving the experience analysis outside of the valuation team could be one way to achieve that. So common business questions that additional analysis could solve could be what is the impact of fraud non-disclosure on outcomes? What about the impact of tightening and loosening loadings? Or the impact of target marketing or analysing the impact of certain return to work strategies? So our proposed third level of analysis is what we see as the final step, and it's overlaying external data to current analysis and decision making. So this slide has a few examples of what external data is out there that could be relevant for disability income. So we all know it. There's more explanatory power and information that we currently have, let alone the information that we could buy, which could drive insight, and even more than that, could identify actions that we could take to manage our business differently. And this wave of value is what is continuing activity in this area. So the key is how to grow it, expand it, and bring additional expertise in techniques and data sources. The emerging requirement to distill large amounts of information in an understandable and actionable manner is a challenge for the life actuarial profession, where reliance on older software and older techniques is common. We need to embrace our curiosity in what is driving the experience for disability income business, and we need to harness the existing data that we have to our full potential, as well as our skills and expertise. There have been presentations that have questioned the sustainability of the whole product, and I think we need to think about what we can do that we can avoid draconian product changes that might limit the availability of it as an insurance need or just result in increasing premiums that shrinks the size of the market. And we believe a significant part of the answer is how well we deploy analytics to prevent non-disclosure, or prevent anti-selection from going undetected, or to further empower claims management. So that's what we think, but we're also very interested in hearing what you have to say. So now's the opportunity for you to share your views, as well as Michael and I would be happy to take any questions as well.
Thank you, Chris and Michael. I think you covered a whole spectrum of data problems and what we need to collect in this industry. As Chris mentioned, we open now for questions. We have about 20 minutes. We have a microphone. Please state your name before you ask questions so we know who we're coming for. This is recorded. I think both of them are happy to take comments about their presentation, but I think from the audience, we'd also like to hear about your own challenges you've had in collecting data and analysing data, whether it's a problem with systems or resources. I know a lot of companies have invested a lot of time in underwriting systems in the past and more likely in the claim systems today, and it'd be interesting to hear your own experiences about how involved you got in actually what data you do actually collect. Because a lot of times I think this data was... these systems have been designed by underwriters or claims people without actually talking to the actuaries too much about what would help in the whole business scheme of things. Do I have anyone? Thank you.
Hi, Stephen Lee. So if you're adding external information to your personal information that you're collecting already, is there some privacy constraint there, or how do you deal with the Privacy Act does that limit what you can do?
Yes. I think one of the message from Chris and I on this presentation is, and the message from overseas indeed was, you know, if you've got a lot of internal structured data and you start with that, it's easy to analyse, it's easy to get some runs on the board, it's easy to demonstrate value to management. And I think if you were at Ken's last presentation, I think one thing that didn't get talked about was one of the obstacles with getting management support is to get some runs on the board, and people have got this working, have got some runs on the board, and then they get permission to take it forward. So the external analysis is some, you know, can be an extension, and that was Chris and I's other observation, is to the extent when you are using external information because of privacy, because it has had to be anonymised or grouped, then all of a sudden it loses a lot of its value. Whereas when you did your underwriting, you collected age, BMI, blood pressure, hypertension, mental state, all of these things, which is on the person you're underwriting.
Young, AIA, thanks for the presentation. Just a comment. Many of the issues that you've talked about, we can identify with. Just something to add, definitions. So sometimes the people putting the information in will see a field and it will have a label and it will mean something to them, but the users of the data, the actuaries and so on, we ascribe particular technical precise meanings to those fields, and it's a situation where we need to get on the same page because there's that disconnect, and that's another thing that makes things challenging.
Yep, I agree. I think that just goes to the point of there being more of actuaries, claims, underwriting working together, and to optimise outcomes, absolutely.
I'm John Dodsworth from Suncorp. Yeah, it's a great paper, and it's giving us all a lot of things to think about. Just wanted to just make a comment on the point. It was a small point in the presentation about the Excel tools and access not being the way to go. I would just caution by saying that we as actuaries need to work out where we want to be, and sometimes that means building prototype models. And so we will need to turn to Excel to build a generalised linear model, which later then can be turned into a black box system, for lack of a better phrase. So I think we need to take baby steps to get to where we want to be, and we just need to recognise that we just can't do one big leap and get to this great perfect world. It has to be incremental, and we need to use the tools that we have at our disposal to get there. Thanks.
Yeah, agree. I think you're absolutely right. We don't want to be getting to a stage where we're throwing out everything of what's happening, and there is benefit in using Excel and Access for certain things, and certainly starting in the right direction is the right way to go.
Yeah, I agree as well, John, 100% with you. I think the observation we were trying to make is that in other insurers, you know, in other professions and general insurance and health and in other overseas, just being aware of how many relationships and analysis they've been able to test, you know, and think about how long did it take us to do something. And the point was just being aware of, am I doing the right thing? So I think we're absolutely aligned.
Can I ask the audience, I mean, apart from Excel and Access, has anyone used, you know, things like SAS or R, or, you know, I remember at university we used to have all these lovely programs in the mainframe that did statistics. Does anyone here want to know up that we use anything other than the powerhouse of Excel?
I've been trying to get rid of SAS, but I just employ somebody who's doing R, and he's brilliant. He's making me feel so old.
Well,
it's available
free on the We've got plenty of time for more questions, guys.
There's probably another question to the audience. I mean, have people been involved in what data actually does get collected underwriting or claim stage? I'm always interested whether actuaries have ever actually get involved in that process, or whether it's basically this is what you get and that's it. So can I probably get you to go to the microphone and please.
Brett from Suncorp. Brett Pickett, yeah. So I'm involved in the strategic what data we need to capture, but unfortunately we're sort of being the last at the post to be involved, and also it seems to be that it's always sort of rushed and please can you give us our comments within the next week or fortnight, and it's exactly at the same time as we're doing sort of experience investigations, coming up with best estimate assumptions right at the end of the year. So the timing is never really perfect. I just feel like you never get, well, personally, I don't get sort of 100% in depth to actually get that strategic view and work out exactly what I'm going to need in the future. So that's how I feel.
Sorry, Young, go again. Yeah, another comment. You can see what I think about a lot. I think a common issue that I've discovered in a number of organizations is identifying who owns the data. It's such a basic question, really. But, you know, that can be they do, and so on, right? So until you get clear ownership of that database, you will have a lack of accountability, and that has a big part to do with the with what the quality of the data. Sorry, not your question, but just another one.
Yeah. I know when these guys were doing the research, one of the common themes that a lot of people said about why they're not doing as much analysis as they like is because basically everyone's running around trying to do best estimate assumptions last minute for valuation purposes or whatever special number that needs to come out. And there is a very lack of dedicated resources to having some type of analytics unit or whatever you want to call it sitting over the top. I don't know if you've all come across the same type of issues in your own companies, but it just is a lack of resources to actually do that in-depth type of analysis.
Yeah, look, the data one, there was a lot of discussion we didn't include in the presentation around data. I think one thing I found interesting is no one thought there was a particular silver bullet. People were doing all sorts of things. I think your one around interaction was obviously a key one. I mean, some people were reconciling data from different systems. Some people said we should have automatic uploads from ATO or other places. There was, actuarial feeding back reserves and comparing with a claims manager, that can help, might help spot the person put down the wrong claim calls or something like that because they're thinking they're closing it in 2 weeks and actuarial thinks it's a $200,000 claim. Running analytics over the data, the system vendors talked around soft validation versus hard validation, trying to not give people too much to enter. There was no silver bullet. And I think on the optimistic side, I think the overall observation was the data was now good enough. There were quite a few companies that said it's good enough to use now. It's not perfect, there are some mistakes, but it's good enough. And it's good enough even now we've made our occupations far more granular, and it's good enough even though now we've made our primary causes more granular and we've included some secondary factors or, secondary cause of claim more granular or a specific field.
Call it an early mark. Everyone thank Chris and Michael and Norman. Hey.